Hi, I'm Talia, and welcome to another episode of Dose of Pharma. Today, we are joined by Alice Terrill, who graduated with a Bachelor's of Pharmaceutical Sciences Advanced Honours from Monash University, and is also a PhD candidate at the Monash Institute of Pharmaceutical Sciences. So Alice's PhD research focuses on optimizing antibiotic treatments in order to lead to more appropriate prescribing of these medicines, but also to help mitigate antimicrobial resistance. So today, we'll be discussing a little bit about Alice's career journey, and we'll also be investigating a little bit more about her PhD research. So firstly, Alice, I was wondering if you could just briefly introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I think you gave a pretty good introduction about what I'm doing. But yeah, at the moment I'm working on my PhD and we're looking at how we can improve the dosing regimens of antibiotics that we prescribe to prevent and overcome antibiotic resistance. So that's the main thing that my research is working on. I've been at the Monash Parkville campus since I started my undergraduate degree in 2019. And at the moment as well, I teach here, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, Alice. It sounds like you're doing a plethora of different things, which is really, really amazing. So I guess just in regards to your undergraduate experience, so studying pharmaceutical sciences, did you always know that you wanted to undertake a PhD, or did you always have an interest in AMR?
No, I was never too sure when I went into it. I'm the first in family to go to university, so the idea of actually doing a postgraduate degree was not something that really entered my mind at the start. I sort of chose to do this degree over something like biomedical science, because I knew that it was a degree that I could study and then get a job straight away without further study. That said, in my third year, I had to do an 8-week full-time placement, and I probably didn't put all that much thought into my preferences, because I didn't really know. And I got matched with this lab looking at antimicrobial resistance, and I really enjoyed it. And so they said, do you want to come back and do your honours? And I was in the advanced honours course, so that was always on the table. Fell into place for me.
I think it just goes to show that making the most of like the placements you get through university is so important, because you never know, you might discover your passions like you did, which is really, really cool. So in regards to, I guess, your time as an undergraduate student, so you always kind of knew that, did you always kind of know that you wanted to do something in regards to research? And is that why, I guess, pharmaceutical sciences, you talked about getting a job immediately after, which is really very optimistic and a great thought as well. But was research kind of what you saw yourself doing?
I wasn't sure. I've always liked the idea of research. I think there's something so incredible about being able to contribute to this body of knowledge and discover things and test things that nobody has ever looked at before. It's pretty cool. But I wouldn't say my heart was set on research from the start. I didn't, you know, coming into uni, I didn't really know what options there were. So I knew research was an option, but I didn't know a lot about the options that existed in industry either. So I came in with a very open mind and not a lot of direction, I don't think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I also like what you said before about research. It sounds like you have a very innovative view on it, and I think that's exactly what the industry needs. So I thought now we might just kind of move on to really focusing on your research, so on AMR, which is antimicrobial resistance. So just a first question, I guess, would you be able to kind of, for our viewers and listeners who don't know exactly what AMR is, would you be able to just give a definition or an explanation of what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So antimicrobial resistance is basically referring to when treatments aren't working. So I look at antibiotics, like I work with bacteria, and the way that we define it is when at least one drug in three different classes of antibiotics don't work. So antibiotics, there's heaps, there's heaps of different ones, and they fall into different classes. So when you can take a drug from at least three of those classes and it doesn't work against the antibiotic, that's when we would regard it as resistant.
Yeah, sure. So that's okay. So it was out of those drug classes. So are there any kind of, I guess, a bit of a kind of testing some knowledge here, but any common antibiotics that come to mind that are particularly susceptible towards resistance?
Not necessarily. It depends more on the kind of bacteria. So if you look in your, what is it, the AMH guidelines?
Yeah, yes.
Depending on the, maybe it doesn't in that, but depending on the class of bacteria, there are generally classes of antibiotics that are recommended against it.
Okay.
So it's very circumstantial because, lots of kinds of antibiotics, but also lots of kinds of bacteria. Some have crossover in what works and doesn't work, others less so. We then also have some antibiotics that are only prescribed to treatment-resistant infections. Yep. So they're almost sort of being gatekept as a last resort, and only in really critical patients do they actually get brought in and used.
Yeah, so I guess
that answer your question.
Yeah, it does perfectly. And I guess it kind of really links into why does antimicrobial resistance need to be addressed?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge issue. I think a lot of us think of antibiotics when you go to the doctors and you're sick and you get your prescription and go home, and that's all well and good. When they're often most important, though, is in a hospital setting. It's really common for patients in the ICU who already have a lot of other complications, already have a weakened immune system, to pick up infections. And for us, when we get sick, it doesn't feel very nice and it's like a bit crap. But if you're in hospital, those infections can become life-threatening. So it's really important that we have effective antibiotics, because otherwise those patients are at risk, you know, of getting an infection and not recovering from it, essentially. So it's really important we have effective antibiotics.
And do you think, just out of interest, that this antimicrobial resistance, is it prominent in both like a hospital or like a community setting as well? Or is there one which it's more observed?
It's fairly widespread, I'd say. Yeah.
Just in regards to, I guess, so we have this issue of antimicrobial resistance. What strategies does your work kind of employ to try and address this?
Yeah. So there's heaps of different strategies people are taking everywhere. What our lab works on specifically is a few different things. So we look really closely at the dose. So we essentially, what our lab does is we take existing antibiotics. We're not trying to invent anything new, and we look at how we dose them. So what we find when we're working with a patient in the ICU, they're not taking tablets like you or I would if we went to the doctors. They've got hooked up to an IV. It's going straight into the bloodstream. So whether you give that as a continuous infusion and the antibiotic concentration is steady the whole time, or if you give it as intermittent dosing, so there's those peaks and troughs, even if it's the same amount of antibiotic over the same amount of time, that concentration time profile actually has an effect on the bacterial killing and the likelihood of resistance development.
Sure.
So we can test all of that in an in vitro system, which is really cool. What we then do is we take that data and we design models that can describe that data. And what that allows us to do is to try and predict outcomes without having to go and test it, essentially. So beyond that, we do a lot of work looking at combination therapies. A lot of the time what we're finding is using a singular antibiotic doesn't work, but if we can use two antibiotics together, it does work, which is really interesting. And then the other thing, lots of things going on. The other thing that I've been working on is I actually have some strains of genetically modified bacteria.
Oh, wow.
And so they're really handy because they're all exactly the same except for the singular mutation that's in each of them. And so what that allows us to do is see the effect of that singular mutation. And that's been really interesting as well.
Yeah, I think it's really good that your lab and even the work that you're doing specifically, there's a variety of approaches that you're taking. I think that'll just, definitely really help and contribute a lot towards research and specifically hoping to mitigate antimicrobial resistance. In terms of, I guess, a rationale behind your approaches, it's quite a broad question, but was there a reason why you're doing things the way that you are?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of research going on at the moment. So we look at some combinations of drugs, and there's quite a lot of knowledge about them. Other combinations, there's not much knowledge at all. So it's an area that's growing of research, but it's also an area that doesn't have heaps of existing knowledge. A lot of times, so combination therapies have been being used for a long time, and these days some of our newer approved antibiotics are combination therapies. However, a lot of it is sort of been, or sometimes is just that a little bit hodgepodge done by the pharmacist, like whacking two together to give it a shot. So we're really trying to rationalize that treatment. So it's all based on existing literature and things that we've seen. We also have to take into consideration things like safety profiles. So when we take two different classes of antibiotics, not only are we looking at the effect that they have on the bacteria, but you also have to see if they're going to be an effect on the body, giving those at the same time as well. So some combinations haven't been researched as much because there were concerns around that. And it's not something that our lab specifically looks into, but it's something that, you know, has to be taken into consideration when we're looking at the concentrations.
Yeah, the concentration. So is that, I guess it's kind of linked to this next question about, I guess, the rationale behind your selection of combined therapy. So is it really just based on like efficacy or the minimum inhibitory concentration, or is it more to do, I guess, with what's safest as well, of course?
Yeah, so it's a bit what's safest. There's also a lot of rationale behind the mechanism of action of the different antibiotics. And there's different approaches there. So you actually might take two antibiotics that are from the same class and just target different proteins. So say our carbapenems, they're a big class of antibiotics. They target your penicillin binding proteins. So they're important for the cell wall synthesis. But there's heaps of different kinds of penicillin binding proteins. So you might take two carbapenems to actually target different ones. The other mechanism, or the other rationale, sorry, is to choose two antibiotics with different mechanisms to sort of attack the cells from different angles. What that also means is usually within bacterial infections, what we find is there's these subpopulations. So there might be a subpopulation that's resistant to one antibiotic, but not resistant to another antibiotic. So when you're dosing with two, you're more likely to cover the different subpopulations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
So that's some of the rationale that goes on there.
Great. So there is quite a lot, I guess, to consider even before you're kind of researching. There's a lot to do prior.
Yeah. And what we find as well is some antibiotics, like they improve each other's efficacy. So we're finding that some, and hopefully I'll do some microscopy work soon to confirm this, but some actually improve the permeability of others. So it can improve the amount getting into the intracellular environment to have an effect, which is really cool.
So just in relation to, I guess, what you just mentioned, that's something that's very interesting. And as a pharmacy student, we don't actually get a chance to learn about this, even though we are the ones handing out antibiotics at the pharmacy. So it's quite interesting. But in regards to that microscopy you were mentioned, would you be able to elaborate a bit more on what that testing or process involves?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I haven't really made a start at actually doing it yet.
Sure.
But what it will look like is tagging some of the antibiotics and then imaging it with a microscope and just seeing how much is able to permeate the cell, essentially. So to test that by itself and then in combination with another antibiotic and just using even like GFP, you can see how much is getting into the cell.
Yeah, great. I'm very excited to hear how it goes, the process. So hopefully we can get updates on this incredible work that you're doing. In regards to, I guess, the team that you're working with, so you mentioned before that there are quite a lot of different strategies in regards to helping research this area and helping to kind of, I guess, find solutions towards it. But are the members in your team, are they all working on kind of different strategies, or do you work with people quite closely, or how does it work within a PhD lab?
Yeah, look, it depends on the lab. Every PhD lab is very different. Our lab is fairly tight-knit, I'd say. We work on different things, but using very, very similar approaches. So we use the same, generally the same laboratory techniques when we're testing. Sure. And then the modeling that I mentioned that we do, that's a fairly unique thing. So everyone in our lab pretty much works on that, and so modeling their data. But for example, I mentioned that I was using the genetically modified bacteria. One of my other PhD counterparts has used isolates. So there were actually samples, clinical samples from patients in the ICU. Different people will be working on different antibiotics. We're all sort of doing similar things, but a little bit different.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's good to hear that there's kind of a lot of, as I mentioned before, a lot of approaches in within research. It's not just one rigid kind of approach. In terms of, I guess, the potential applications of your findings, how do you think they're going to be changing current practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So the sort of the big picture of what we'd really like to see is whole genome sequencing is becoming more accessible. It's not yet there.
Yeah.
But what I would really like to see is things at a stage where when a patient's in hospital, we can take a sample of their infection and sequence the genome. From there, what we can do is we can use that information and apply it to these models that we're designing. And that model can basically allow you to test really, really quickly different antibiotics and different concentrations and come out with a solution that's going to work against that bacteria almost instantaneously.
Oh, wow.
And so to then say with confidence, this is the antibiotic and this is the dosing regimen that we can apply for this patient and have a treatment that works, as opposed to at the moment, a lot of the time, particularly with these treatment-resistant infections, there's a lot more trial and error. And when you've got a patient in the ICU, that's not an ideal situation to be in. So that's sort of the long-term goal with all of this research.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just to add to that point you were saying about it being very, very time critical. So by kind of evolving these processes and making them more optimized, hopefully we'll be able to treat our patients quicker, but also safer as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost that moving towards personalized medicine where we can set up models that can account for those individual patient factors, you know, your other comorbidities, impaired kidney and renal clearance and all those sorts of things, so that it is safe for the patient.
For sure. And specifically, as you said, in those really specific patient circumstances, because there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach.
No.
Medicine. It's very, you need to have a very specific patient-tailored approach. So it's very exciting to hear that your technology kind of allows for that. So in regards to, I guess, the process that you were just mentioning, has similar work been implemented in clinical settings before, or is this something quite new to the science world?
Yeah, it's fairly new. It's like all personalized medicine at this stage. Like it's there and we sort of have the technology to do it, but it's expensive and slow and not quite there. That said, we had a case, and this was actually before I was in the lab that I'm in now, so I wasn't involved with this research,
but
they had clinical isolates from a patient who I believe was in the ICU with a brain infection, and it was treatment resistant, and they actually thought that he was going to die from this infection. So our lab was able to use those samples, test them, and come up with a dosing regimen that was then used, and he lived. That works, that approach, but it's expensive and it's slow, because we have to get those samples from the hospital, we have to test them, and these experiments like run for days to then come up with results to send back with a predicted dosing regimen, which is why the modeling is so important. But so it is being used, and which is really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you also for sharing that that story as well about the patient. It's it's good to kind of understand how technology works in a real life patient setting. Definitely great context. So I remember at the start we were talking about the fact that it's not a specific bacteria, but different classes, some are a little bit more prone to resistance than others. Do you also kind of think that there is quite an unnecessary exposure to antibiotics? For example, like medical professionals just prescribing antibiotics for reasons that might not require antibiotics?
Yeah, and I think it's been known for a fair while that it's a big problem.
Yes.
It's also not always as straightforward, though, I think, as it sounds. Like, obviously, yeah, when we're going to the doctors and having an infection, it's better if they're not prescribing antibiotics if they're not sure if it's a bacterial infection. You know, it might be a viral infection, in which case antibiotics are not doing anything. But it's really hard to know, particularly, you know, if you have children that are sick. Yeah. If it is bacterial and you don't treat it, they can get a lot worse. So yes, it's a huge problem, and overprescription of antibiotics is a huge problem, but it's hard for the doctors as well.
Of course.
I think in Sweden, I'm not sure, it's becoming more common to have on the spot swabs or swabbing that can tell you if an infection is bacterial or viral.
Oh, wow.
Which is really cool. Again, it's like really expensive, but if we can move towards a stage where like that is common practice in the GP, that would be amazing, and start to help mitigate this problem of overprescription without, you know, risking the safety of individuals.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear that Sweden has such a quick technology that can
don't
do
quote
that.
Me on it being
no
Sweden.
I won't quote sure. You on Sweden that somewhere in the world has developed this really, really cool technology. So I guess in regards to bringing it back to a more pharmacist and pharmaceutical scientist perspective, what are the main differences as to how antimicrobial resistance affects both professions in their line of work?
Oh, I mean, I guess, you know, as a pharmaceutical scientist, it affects our research. if it wasn't a problem, we wouldn't be researching it, would we? Right. And it, you know, I come at it from a microbiology perspective, but there are chemists coming at it, trying to work out how to synthesize new antibiotics. Like, there's a whole myriad of stuff being worked on. From a pharmacist perspective, I think it is most relevant when you are in the hospital and you've got IV delivery of antibiotics.
Sure.
And yeah, seeing that at the moment, a lot of our treatments aren't working, and that's, you know, not good, not fun for anybody. So I think moving towards a point where pharmacists have the ability to be able to better prescribe and be more informed in their prescriptions of antibiotics to patients.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, yeah, pharmacists, I think having that information to be able to pass that on to patients in a, of course, a very patient-friendly way will definitely hope to, I guess, increase the community's awareness about this issue as well, because it's not something that's talked about outside of the healthcare community and the research community. So that's definitely a good point as well. So I guess I have it's a broad question once again, but what do you think the future of antimicrobial resistance is if we're going at the rate we're going now?
I mean, it depends on who you ask. The World Health Organization released a publication, and I think it said by 2050, we'd be having 10 million deaths a year from antimicrobial resistance if the trajectory continues. That paper, though, has been highly contested by other groups, so it depends who you ask. I like to say I'm optimistic, and I think with the sheer amount of research going on, I really hope that we can move back toward the space where, or not reach a space where bacterial infections are, you know, the death sentence that they were before we discovered antibiotics, and stay in this space where we have these, you know, magic treatments. And I really hope that they can continue to work. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good to have an optimistic outlook, like you mentioned, because that's what I guess are key motivators and which enable us to work towards changing the future for the better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great outlook to have, from my personal opinion. I guess in regards to future pharmacy graduates or future pharmaceutical scientists interested in antimicrobial resistance, how can they get involved? How can they help contribute and help reduce the instances?
Yeah, I think it's a hard one. It's a tricky one. I think making sure, you know, if you do get sick and you have a prescription, follow the instructions from your doctor. If they say finish the packet, finish the packet. If they say take half the packet, take half the packet. So do what your doctor tells you to do and don't just stop as soon as you feel better if you've been told to keep going. Beyond that, I think connecting with other networks. So there's a few different like antimicrobial resistant networks out there. You can find them usually on Twitter or LinkedIn, and just connecting with them and keeping, you know, your eyes and ears open to the different research that's going on and learning about it and just seeing what's out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Keeping up to date, I guess, into what's changing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, do you have any advice on students who want to apply for a PhD or do a PhD like you are currently?
Yeah. That's a big question. I think, like, do it. If you're passionate about it, do it. I think that if you're applying for a PhD, though, know your why. I think knowing why you want to do it is fairly important. And get to know who your supervisor, who you're applying for your supervisor to be, and make sure you get along with them. It's super important to be passionate about the actual research that you're doing, but it's also really, really important to have a supervisor that is going to support you and push you and encourage you. So making sure that you check that that is going to be the person that you're applying to is going to be that person that can do that for you, I think is really important.
Thank you so much, Alice. I think that's really great advice for all of our viewers and listeners who do intend to complete a PhD or even have a career within helping to mitigate the issue of antimicrobial resistance. So with that note, I just wanted to say thank you so much, Alice, for your time today.
Oh, that's okay.
It's been amazing hearing your perspectives, and obviously you know so much about the research process in regards to your field of study. So it's cool to hear about what's really going on behind the scenes, because we, as students, we don't really hear a lot about that. So it's quite interesting as well. In addition to that, I feel like we've all learned a lot about the fact that it's not just one approach. There's a lot of different strategies you can employ as well. Mm-hmm. And that the issue of antimicrobial resistance, it affects pretty much everyone. So it is something that we really need to take seriously and hopefully work towards improving in the future. So thank you so much once again. And we look forward to hearing what your future research entails.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Dosa Pharma acknowledges the traditional custodians of the various lands throughout Australia on which we connect today, and pays respect to elders past, present, and future.